The following is a reading from the introductory remarks of the 10th Space Manufacturing Conference, held May 15th through 19th, 1991, at Princeton. These were the words of Gerard K. O'Neill, founder of the Space Studies Institute. As you know, SSI is a low-profile operation. That's by design. We are not a gee-whiz society. We're trying to do serious, worthwhile, permanent things which are going to be valuable and bring us out into space. I'd like to comment now on the lecture of our dear friend and fine speaker of last night, Joe Allen, former astronaut, and about the Augustine report which he spoke of. First of all, Joe Allen, who served on the Augustine Commission, is a wonderful person. I said a few things about him last night and won't repeat them, but he is one of the finest, most intelligent, and most capable individuals whom I've ever met, and is totally honest. He has been a dear friend for many years. He spoke in conservative terms last night, which was appropriate to his responsibility as a member of the Augustine Commission. But we also know that within him, there beats the heart of someone who is quite willing to go out on a personal limb. Someone who would jump into his T-38 and take off from Houston and fly up to McGuire in 1974 to attend a conference called by an unknown physics professor at Princeton on a subject not as semi-orthodox as space manufacturing, but purely, blatantly, and simply 100% on space colonies. Now that shows where Joe's heart really is. During the period since the last SSI conference, Joe has joined the board of directors of the Space Studies Institute and is a responsible and conscientious board member. Here is my personal view about the Augustine Report and about where I see NASA and the federal government going at the present time. Although I served on the President's Commission on Space in the mid-1980s, I, just as Joe did last night, will speak my own mind. The Augustine Report, in my judgment, was written by a fine set of people, including good friends of ours. For example, Dr. Thomas Paine, a member of that commission, is a director of SSI. He was also the chairman of the President's Commission on Space, which I referred to. Laurel Wilkening, a capable and responsible person, was the second in command on the National Commission on Space. When the rubber met the road, as it always does in commission reports like that, and settled down to who were going to be the three or four people to write the final report, it was Laurel, Tom, and I who met in Tucson, Arizona for several days to complete the report. That does not mean that those were the only people who contributed to it. There were extremely important contributions, especially from the head of the Harvard Astrophysical Conservatory, George Field, who was, for health reasons, unable to be with us in Tucson. I have not asked Joe Allen, but I'm virtually certain that Joe was one of the three or four out of the dozen or so members of the Augustine Commission who carried that same burden. If you read that 48-page report, which I recommend that you do, you will find it, I think, one of the most beautifully written documents that has ever come out of the federal government. Many of the things which it recommends, virtually everything that is said, makes a great deal of sense. Nevertheless, it is my belief that the Augustine Report, like every other report which has been generated concerning the future of space, including the 1986 report of our National Commission on Space, are all, in my judgment, too timid. They link fundamentally and make dependent the future of the United States space program on a science program. I say that, speaking as a scientist. There is nothing more self-serving, there is nothing more conservative than the scientific establishment. The scientific establishment takes as a high priority the justification of more science, more grants, more funds, more graduate students, and so on, doing basically the same things. We have seen that perpetuated for 40 years of hydrogen fusion research without a positive economic result. To be fair, some of NASA's worst blunders, the shuttle and the space station, have nothing to do with science. I think we are seeing a fossilization that has occurred in NASA for many years. As long as NASA always looks to the scientific community to justify NASA's existence, we will always have a very timid, though possibly still very expensive, space program. It will not tie in with the needs of the ordinary person in this country. I have had an opportunity to observe alternative viewpoints because of some quite unusual changes that have happened in the federal government over the last couple of years since the election of President Bush. Because of work by Greg and the SSI staff, I met personally with the Vice President and with Dick Darman, the head of the Office of Management and Budget, who is, by the way, very much a space buff. It was in a small group over several hours. I made the point to both the Vice President and to Dick Darman that there is just one thing that will revitalize the space program, which, as Joe says, will otherwise become increasingly anachronistic and not part of the ongoing vital life of this nation. That one thing that can drive a space program to become an essential part of our national life is real, genuine, economic benefit in large quantities brought to the people. Taking cases listed in the Augustine report, I think that scientific exploration, including the so-called mission to planet Earth, does not constitute such justification. The mission to planet Earth is a fundamentally passive, observational mission. It will simply be overtaken by events. The French Spot Image spacecraft is already doing a far better job than the long, laborious, expensive U.S. governmental Landsat program has ever done. Landsat fell into all sorts of political difficulties, whereas in France, Spot Image was handled intelligently. And that's only one of many examples. I think that what's going to go on in the U.S. space program is a succession of pointless, duplicative programs. The productive alternative is to bring in ideas like solar power satellites. The best reason for people to be in space is not just because it's hot stuff, but because they're needed to do genuinely economically important tasks. And I made it clear in my discussions with the Vice President, Dick Darman, and others that I see satellite solar power, in whatever variant turns out to be the most cost-effective, to be the big driver. Energy is the one unvarying thing that we know is going to be needed throughout the world, even 50 years from now. We know from United Nations projections, which have always been on the conservative side, how much energy at a minimum is going to be needed. And it is one heck of a lot. Presently, NASA alone gets about $15 billion per year. Manna from heaven. That's the standard way, a congressional appropriation, that money comes to a federal agency as a pure drain on the taxpayers. Unfortunately, NASA really is doing almost nothing concrete for the economic well-being of this country and for the environment of the world. It is hard to find exceptions to that statement. Let's contrast that $15 billion program with the economic potential of satellite solar power. I calculated, on what I believe are conservative assumptions, that satellite solar power as an export product could be from a $2 trillion per year market to a $6 trillion per year market 50 years from now. That's revenues from which profits can be gained. Note that it's about 200 times NASA's current annual budget. And by the way, solar power can clean up the environment of the Earth by displacing fossil and nuclear fuels. It can also make it possible for literally billions of human beings to lift themselves out of poverty. Now that's a space program that I believe makes sense. We really need to change vitally the course of the U.S. National Space Program, because as it is now headed, NASA is increasingly irrelevant in the future. One reason is that we are not the only nation with capability in space. The Europeans, the Russians, and the Japanese have shown that they are capable of profiting by our mistakes and taking the sensible paths which we have strayed from. They have intelligent, well-directed space programs of their own, far more cost-effective than ours. If we continue to ignore satellite power as a goal of our space program, satellite power is not going to be forgotten. It will simply be picked up and exploited by one or more other nations that see that potential $6 trillion a year market. The nations that do will become the leading nations of the 21st century. I hope very much that the U.S. plays an important role in whatever consortium of nations does develop solar satellite power. But it's currently doubtful that we will. And it will not happen if the U.S. federal space program continues as it is now headed. I apologize to the speakers this morning for having taken their time. But it seemed to me important to give you these strong beliefs based on more than 30 years of observation of the U.S. and foreign space programs.